Alika, it's really great that you're here. Oxford Reads Kafka is looking at Kafka's texts themselves, but also how Kafka has been translated, transposed, taken up by authors from across the world. And it's really great that we're here to talk about another great, indeed Nobel Prize-winning author, J.M. Coetzee, and his work with Kafka. And instead of, as with many of the people I've been talking to, looking at one individual work, in a sense, Kafka has accompanied him throughout his work, hasn't he?
Yes, I mean, I think Kafka has been, amongst other modernist writers, has been incredibly generative for Coetzee as a writerly interlocutor, as somebody whose work and ideas and atmosphere he has, I'm not going to say all the time, but frequently had in mind when writing his own fiction.
Why does a writer like Coetzee cleave to Kafka? I mean, you said atmosphere, you said has in mind. That was an interesting phrase you used as well. What is there for him in Kafka?
There's what we might want to call, for want of a better term, Kafka's modernist aesthetic, that is kind of honing down to essential features, working with the generic in order to imply the specific, which, Victorian writing, 19th century, British writing did the other way around. You hone in on the detail and you build a picture out from that. So I think Coetzee has liked that spare, sketchy, almost skeletal aesthetic that Kafka perfected in his short life.
Although Kafka's full of details, Kafka's full of concrete things, gestures. I was just at an event last night talking about the ballet of Metamorphosis, and it was all about the gestures, which are all there in the text. How do those two things go together?
Well, fiction exists as a real world setting. It has to suspend our disbelief. And I too was having a quick look at Kafka again this past week, and thinking about those very precise details that that Kafka used, for example, in Metamorphosis. The sister is, is going to the music school. I mean, that is a very, very specific detail whereby we understand a whole world, a whole world of, Prague in the 1910s, say. So Coetzee does something very, very similar. He too will kind of stage universal conditions. A character keeping alive in a complicated civil war situation, as in Life and Times of Michael Kay, which is one of his Kafka-esque works. But he will bring that situation to his readers with some very, very clearly evoked specifics. So there's a particular scene of lying under an ox wagon on a starry night. And the writer, takes us into that and thereby gives us a kind of a whole landscape, dry, desert-like, in which he then situates his character, Michael Kay, his Kafka-esque character, Michael Kay.
I want to come back to Michael Kay in a second, but one of the arguments that's been made, you mentioned Kafka's status as a modernist, sort of European modernism in its most pared-down sense. Mm. And yet, in a way, Coetzee is also about the reality of contemporary life. It's about politics. It's about, really a kind of engaged writing. And that's one of the tensions also, isn't it, for reading Coetzee?
It is and it isn't. I would push back a little on the word engaged, because Coetzee's writing is often at a parable-like and allegorical level. the politics, and this is again, I think, something that he learns in part at Kafka's feet, others too, other models too. But you know, he implies a politics, but it's not ever explicitly realized. I think somebody once said of his work, you know, that the two words South Africa, which is the country where he kind of sets arguably his most interesting political fictions, those two words don't actually feature in his creative prose.
Ah, that's very interesting. Mm. I don't know his work well enough to have realised that. That's really interesting.
So he, and in fact, he was widely, accused as possibly too strong, but he was charged with being too apolitical at a time of political polarization in the country of his birth. So the question of his being an engaged writer is a kind of a very thorny question in certain contexts. And I think he has negotiated his way around that, how to deal with politics in fiction, in part actually by learning from that very spare, homing in on the specifics and implying a wider world, but not actually always explicitly pointing to it from Kafka.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, the thing that, when I was thinking about talking to you, the thing that struck me, of course, is the obvious thing is outsiders. Kafka is, famously known as the sort of apotheosis of the outsider and deals with outsiders in almost every text. And it seemed to me that was a kind of way into reading Kutz's reception of Kafka too. Does that chime?
Yes, yeah. I mean, Kutz's characters, his central characters, are often those who kind of refuse, who opt out, as I think Kutz himself puts it at one point, and tangentially referring to Michael Kay, who move through the system without being a term in the system. Anarchic figures also, but certainly outsider figures, those who do not participate, those who stand back. And Life and Times of Michael Kay is a fictional study in what it means to be such a person in a fraught, highly polarized political situation.
I mean, what's interesting, I'm just trying to think of Kafka's works, and obviously we've been talking a lot about the metamorphosis. Mm. Kafka's outsiders suffer from their outsiderdom. Mm. I mean, they are rendered outsiders generally in society. I'm just trying to think if I'm remembering them all, but... So your take on Kutz is that they choose to be outsiders. They are, or is it more complicated?
No. I mean, the system, which for Kutz is the apartheid system, the system of racial segregation that ended in the 1990s in South Africa. His case would be that is something that this situation is something that the system imposes, and with refusal comes suffering. If we think of another example, Waiting for the Barbarians, the magistrate figure there reflects at length on suffering and on torture and on the consequences of not subscribing to the rules of the regime, which are negative consequences for him and for all others who refuse, for the barbarians.
The word barbarians actually leads me to something I've been thinking about, although it's not quite linked, but which is animals. And I'm reminded of the end of Disgrace, like a dog.
Yes, dying like a dog, yeah.
I'm very struck by kind of waves of Kafka interpretation, and at the moment everybody really wants to talk about the humanimal, as I'm told we call it now, the kind of post-human, the animals, and there are so many animals in Kafka. Is that something, is that a place that they come together as well? Mm-hmm. I noticed that Kutz had also written an article on the creature in The Burrow, Kafka's one of Kafka's last stories.
Well, Kutz is... is, you know, famously a vegetarian and against vivisection, and is very concerned with the rights of animals. He writes about this at some length in the novel Elizabeth Costello, which is based on a series of lectures that this fictional writer character Elizabeth Costello gives, and where she reflects on abattoirs being the kind of the torture chambers of, you know, our period. I'd also like to pick up on the idea that you just sort of offered of these waves of interpretation. There are, in a sense, waves of Kafka interpretation that run across J.M. Coetzee's work. So there is the kind of the Hume animal wave that kind of takes us from 1999, which is the year of the publication of Disgrace, and which ends Dying Like a Dog, that Kafkaesque line, to Elizabeth Costello, which is about 2004. And then there's the kind of the pre-Hume animal phase, which is the spare aesthetic, the item that moves through the machine without being part of the code. There's arguably a post, say, 2005 phase where, you know, Coetzee is particularly interested in refugee figures, those who kind of move across borders, who are rejected by society, which is his kind of Australian phase, which again can be interpreted as an engagement of a kind with Kafka.
It's amazing how many facets of Kafka actually are coming there. One of the things I noticed in this article that I came across accidentally was his interest in the burrows about time, narrative time, and the business of narrative time being the time of action as well. Does that strike a chord with you, thinking about Coetzee?
I'm always fascinated, and I don't want to claim that he learns this from Kafka, but I am fascinated with how Coetzee manages present tense writing. He always, and arguably to my eye as a reader, this is something that Kafka manages in a slightly different way, using different techniques, but also manages very, very well. Coetzee uses this relentless, to some readers, present tense. But what that does, and I'm speaking as as a writer myself, what that does is that it always situates us in the moment that the character is in. We are right there. And so what that actually also does, going back to what we were saying right at the beginning about setting, what that also does is that sort of obviates the need to do too much setup. Because if we are in the moment, in the present tense moment, this now with the character right here, we don't need to worry too much about what is around them.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's have a word about the life and times of Michael K, or Michael K, I wanted to say. It's been read as a take on the trial, but it also involves Kleist's story about Michael Kohlhaas, of course. And it seems to me, I didn't really read it as the trial, actually, to be honest, but I understand other people have, and there seems to be a way into it. And certainly there is judgment and a kind of element of the penal colony punishment.
Absolutely, yeah.
It seems a kind of compendium of all Kafka's major themes and perhaps the themes of modern times as well.
Yeah, I think Kafka is at a second remove to that novel in a way that Kleist is not. I think Kleist, you know, informs the kind of the central shape and unfolding of the story. What is to, and I don't know as much as I should about Kafka's ways of working, but the Coetzee archive at the Harry Ransom Center does give us a very clear sense of how Coetzee works. And what is really interesting to observe is how he writes and unwrites. You know, he repeatedly and kind of indefatigably writes himself out of the script, so that you know, he begins with quite arguably, you know, recognizable apartheid story, and refines that, sifts until the Kleist frame, if you like, and the Kafkaesque motifs, say from the trial, are still there, but the, if you like, the messiness of history has been completely kind of written out. So that's probably not a direct answer to the question, but it is interesting how the literary struts of Coetzee's writing kind of remain, like almost sort of, you know, like a steel frame, while the content is kind of repeatedly purged from the frame.
I mean, the vocabulary that you're using reminds me obviously of The Hunger Artist. This eradication, yeah. This reduction.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that come up anywhere directly in Coetzee, or is it a kind of aesthetic?
It's an aesthetic. And it's there is a fascination in Coetzee, and arguably also in Kafka, with what we can do with the least possible. You know, the aesthetic of bare life. You know, what are the limits beyond which we cannot go, and what does life look like at that limit?
A kind of literature of limits. That's really interesting. When you said he wrote himself out, you know, in the manuscripts, it reminded me, so Kafka's manuscript of the trial, he wrote the beginning and the end, the first two chapters together, and then every chapter in between is an attempt, really, to kind of write himself towards the end, and some of them tail off, and in the middle it says, your process, your trial is not going very well. No, it's not going very well. And because he can't get there, he can't get to the end. So he's sort of writing himself out as well.
Yes.
So is that a bit like the Coetzee, that there's a self-consciousness about that?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. There's a constant, in the notebooks, there's a constant reflection on the process of the writing as it is unfolding. Yeah.
So that is another link with Kafka, isn't it? Where, you know, this idea that literature is everything for him, that he is totally turned towards literature as a sort of existential aspect of his being.
Yes, I think there's a quote from Coetzee that I used in a lecture the other day, so I should get it more or less right, which is something like, writing writes us as we write it. All writing is life writing, says Coetzee too. All writing is autofiction.
Autofiction?
Autofiction, not autofiction, but autofiction. So A-U-T-T-R-E, playing on the French idea of autre, so the other. So we are constantly, as it were, externalizing ourselves in the process of writing, but then also actually reincorporating that into how we understand ourselves through writing.
Writing ourselves as we go, yes. That makes a lot of sense with Kafka as well. It was a sort of existential experience, wasn't it? Always for him. But is Coetzee the same in that regard? He seems to me more sovereign.
I think I'm not sure about this. This is sort of comes out of what we've just been saying, but maybe he's a Kafkaesque writer who found himself in a particular political situation, and now again with the refugee crisis globally, from which he could not turn his eyes as an ethical being.